Never before in history did we have to fight with our own country for the security of our own country. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
If you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. If you do read it, you're misinformed. What is the long-term effect of too much information? One of the effects is the need to be first, not even to be true anymore. So what a responsibility you all have to tell the truth, not just to be first, but to tell the truth. We live in a society now where it's just first. Who cares? Get it out there. We don't care who it hurts. We don't care who we destroy. We don't care if it's true. Just say it. Sell it. Anything you practice, you'll get good at, including BS.
Hold on.
That was Denzel. Good old Denzel. Interesting. I thought that was great. Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. He was right on the money on that one. Welcome back, and I appreciate you listening in. Go to katedalyradio.com on Twitter. It's the Kate Daly Show. Also on Facebook as well, the Kate Daly Show. And there's just so much to say. We're going to say it on this show. I can't believe we're past the middle of May. I just can't believe it. It's just this year. Where did this year even go? I don't know if you're feeling the same way, but that's how I'm feeling. I've got Susan Reeve with me. How are you?
Hello. Really good.
Good. You've got some... It's great stuff. I want to get to it quick because there really is. It's some fantastic stuff on Candace Owens. We'll go there first, and then Mueller, and kind of talk about maybe what's going on behind the scenes right now, too. On your news break, wherever you're listening from, you probably heard a little bit about Trump in the media with impeachment. And of course, they're on that bandwagon again. And it's just ad nauseum. Anyway, go ahead. I want to talk about, because we've talked about censorship always. It comes up every week. But let's talk about Candace Owens, and we'll head into Mueller and then 5G.
Well, Candace Owens is a black activist. She's 29 years old. She works with Charlie Kirk at Turning Point. She also works for PragerU. And up until she was 27 or so, she was a liberal. Mm-hmm. And she said when she saw Donald Trump come down the escalator and the news turned on him and started calling him a racist, she's like, wait a minute. Yeah. I've always known Donald Trump to be like a cultural icon in the black community. Like mm-hmm. rappers made songs,
yeah, sure.
You know, praising
sure,
him.
Sure.
So she started looking a lot deeper, and she realized that the Democrat Party's policies weren't good for black America, and that she started to promote what she saw as conservative policies that were healthy for black America, and lo and behold, that aligned her with conservatives. And so she became just under attack from mm-hmm. the left, just incredibly.
And we mean
so.
like literal attack.
Like called a white supremacist.
And thrown objects at.
Yes. As a white supremacist. Yeah. Called a white supremacist.
Yeah.
So she has been recently temporarily banned from Facebook because she wrote a post that said that there is that wherever liberal policies reign supreme, black America is under threat. Abortion, illegal immigration, welfare traps, which encourage father absence. These are progressive policies that lead to regressive results for my community. Facebook is fearful that black people are waking up. Mm-hmm. And she said it just isn't, you know, yeah. And she got banned. And she said, so it's not an issue of white supremacy. It's a issue of black supremacy. They banned her. Then they said, oh, that was a mistake when people said all she was saying was statistics and
yeah.
facts.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
So now she has posted that an internal memo from Facebook has leaked. So somebody in there leaked it. It said they are offering extra credit to employees that can figure out how to segregate me from their platform. To the brave employee who leaked this, she says, thank you. To the lawyers that follow me, is this legal? I'm taking this very seriously.
Wow.
So it says a source at Facebook told Breitbart News that it maintains an internal list of quote unquote hate agents.
Jeez.
To review for potential termination, and that real Candace Owens is also included on that list in a separate category marked extra credit.
Extra credit.
Extra
huh?
credit if you can get rid of these people off of Facebook.
So and if you're a Kathy Griffin, or you're a politician that just says lies, or you're Kathy Griffin holding up the severed mock head of Trump, you're fine.
Yes.
If you're a black woman in America that's going, hey, wait a minute, look under the hood of the Democratic Party. They have been telling you lies all along and
yes.
you believe them. Please take a second look. You're the hater.
Yes.
Okay. Just
and she
make
says,
sure I got that right.
Yeah. Because she said, what about the 75% of black young young men school age who cannot read at literacy level in California. Why are we not looking at that as a serious, as supremacy? Somebody is doing this to them because that is not natural. Wow. And so they are fighting back with all they have. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, now somebody has leaked the truth. Mm-hmm. So now this is turning into a much bigger fight because this is really the truth of what's going on behind the scenes, that there are hate agents. And as many conservatives know, mm-hmm. many conservatives have been banned from Facebook or Twitter for saying just something.
And still are. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes reinstated and they're said, oh, it's a mistake. That was an accident.
That's why we have to find something new, because we can't be dependent on an organization that's run to remove us. I mean, we have to be able to come up with something else.
The only thing is that when we come up with something else, there's huge efforts to sabotage it. In other words, people get on and start spewing really racial things that are vile to conservatives. Conservatives don't feel that way.
I know.
And so
we always get the racial attack, but I've never met a conservative who's actually a racist before in my life.
Never in my life, because we inherently value people. And when people are valued. Mm-hmm. So now the fact that Candace Owens is able to hold this up as
proof.
Exhibit A. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now we're going on to a much bigger fight. And PragerU actually is suing Twitter. And I don't know if Facebook as well, but PragerU has got a lawsuit out there and other people are joining that lawsuit because it costs a ton of money to sue people.
Yep. True. Absolutely.
So there we have that. Anyway,
all right. Let's talk Mueller.
Oh, Mueller. So all of a sudden, the Democrats have said, we want Mueller. We want Mueller to testify in front of us in the House. In the House. We've got the power. We want Mueller. And Mueller has said, there's a problem with that. And the Democrats are now backpedaling, saying, oh, wait a minute. We're not sure that we want him. Why? Because they might be asked a question. And the question that Mueller might be asked is this. Mr. Mueller, by a Republican. Mr. Mueller, did you go to the Oval Office on May 16th, 2017 because you wanted to apply for the job of FBI director? Doesn't the media say that?
Yeah.
The media says that.
Oh, yeah.
And he would have to answer no. Question, Mr. Mueller, was the mysterious cell phone you left behind in the Oval Office that day actually yours? And he would have to say no, but he left behind a cell phone. And what was that cell phone for? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they start an obstruction investigation the very next day. It all becomes this huge mess. Mueller was there under false pretenses.
Of course.
And they can't have that coming out. So now they're caught. Because liars ultimately get caught up in their own web. They get tangled up in the barbed wire, caught up in their own web. And that's what's happening. So you will start to see them backpedaling and Mueller saying, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. And Barr saying, it's fine with me. So AG Barr, who's supposed to be, you know, so disingenuously haggling for the president.
Right.
He's like, yeah, Mueller, go ahead. You can talk to Congress. And now there's stuff happening that they don't want him to testify. What's up with that? Start asking the questions.
Right.
So anyway, that's just interesting. Take things that you never expect. When you start to see people saying, come on, we want this. We want this. Okay, you can have it.
Sure.
Wait a minute. We expected you to resist. Yeah, we're not resisting.
It's Washington, the musical. It's just
getting
irritating.
It is the circus. Yeah. The clowns are like, we need to go fix our big red rubber noses. Right?
All right.
So anyway. Oh, and the other thing about it's just come out that under the Spygate, where they were spying on the Trump administration and actually spying on a lot of their political opponents, the Obama administration, that the Obama administration cut Situation Room's video feed during meetings on the Russia investigation. So Attorney General Barr is saying, you know what? This is very unusual behavior. Why would they be cutting the video feeds when other people should have been having access to that? And then he says, you start to realize a smaller and smaller clique of people were the ones running these investigations. And a lot of them had spouses who were on the other end of the investigation. Lots of very strange behavior that Barr says, this wasn't typically done. Why was this done? Over and over again. And It was handled at Barr stated, this thing that's interesting is that it was handled at a very senior level of these departments. It wasn't handled in the ordinary way that investigations or counterintelligence investigations are conducted. It was sort of an ad hoc, meaning thrown together small group. And most of these people are no longer with the FBI or the CIA or other agencies involved, meaning they got fired. He says, I think there's a misconception out there that we know a lot about what happened. The fact of the matter is Bob Mueller in the Mueller investigation did not look into the government's activities. We don't know what the government was doing by them collecting all this information.
Right.
Yeah. So all of a sudden now the seamy underbelly of all of this is coming to bear. And Barr is like, yeah, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And I'm an expert. He's an expert. Uh-huh. He held this position before. Oh, and now he's saying, yeah, wow. Yeah. Wow, the corruption. Wow, the mismanagement. And it's just like somebody
there
had
so much of it.
Like teens had a party at a house and just thrashed the place. He walks in. He's like, what the heck is this?
Yeah.
So anyway, there's that. And
if you want to finish this off with a little bit on 5G, we'll end up doing a whole hour on 5G okay. in the next 2 weeks. But
yeah. What was impressive to me is that Thomas Friedman at The New York Times said China deserves Donald Trump. He says it took a human wrecking ball to get China's attention. So he says, we liberals did not deserve Trump, but actually China did. Mm-hmm. That China, when we started creating trade with them back in the 70s, they mm-hmm. were essentially supplying tennis shoes and then some electronics, but it was very kind of low, cheap China stuff.
Okay.
But then it turned into more high tech stuff. And we thought, well, let's just do the high tech. We'll just buy cheap high tech. Mm-hmm. But then it turned into spy stuff. And the spy stuff they're developing includes 5G. And they are putting 5G all over the world. It turns out
it comes into play starting now, actually. It's April, May. I mean, it's starting to roll out.
Really terrifying. And we're kind of, the public is kind of slow on the uptake on this. Mm-hmm. And it says China under Xi, the president, announced a Made in China 2025 modernization plan promising subsidies to make China's private and state-owned companies the world leaders in supercomputing, AI, new materials, 3D printing, mm-hmm. facial recognition software, robotics, electric cars, autonomous vehicles, 5G wireless, and advanced microchips. It's a war.
Well, yeah. A couple of years ago, Putin did. There was a whole article on this, and it said, "Whoever owns AI in the future owns the world, and whoever owns the laundry list that you just read is who owns
it's
the world."
Breathtaking, mm-hmm. really breathtaking.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Yeah, you have to stay in studio with me. We'll cover this next subject from maybe a different angle. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
And it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire.
Welcome back. Listening to little Johnny Cash for you. I love it. Welcome back to the Kate Daly Show. I want to discuss something. Thanks, Susan, by the way. Thank you for all that. Susan's here with me. And I want to discuss something kind of from a different angle. I've tackled this topic with emotion, with morals, with values. And I want to tackle it from a different way today. And I might not get to all the information, so I might have to do an additional show on this just because I think there's so much here to understand on what's actually going on. But in the arena of abortion, this is obviously headline news. This is big news. It's being debated all the time on Facebook. And there's a reason for that, is because a lot of people looking back now at the last 50 years are sort of wondering what we did, how we did it. And, you know, I was even looking back because something kept hitting me about trimesters. And I kept thinking, why do we have, who did that? Who turned it into trimesters? Because for the longest time in history, it was gestation. you had a gestation period of 9 months. The baby was growing for 9 months. And who turned it into trimesters? Because I found it, I always find it kind of intriguing what happens along the way to carve at something, to get something to be what it isn't anymore. And that was only part of it. And that happened because of a justice named Harry Blackbun. And Harry was actually like a Methodist. He was actually what they thought was going to be a conservative. Boy, have we heard this tale before. And he was appointed by Nixon just in time for this Roe versus Wade. And they thought he was conservative. He looked conservative. He walked like a conservative, but he wasn't. And he got in and he actually churned out some of the most liberal sided decisions that we've seen. And he took great lengths to sort of say that the Constitution said certain things that I don't think it says, and that it doesn't contain. And so I want to take a look at this because this is really the crux of the case. And it's it really is something that people need to understand. And there's also another deep layer to this, too, that I'll go over at the end. That's kind of creepy. But let me start here. Roe versus Wade. When people think of this case, they think ruling across the country, which isn't true. And they also don't understand why they came to the decision. So the United States Supreme Court held that a pregnant woman has this, and this is important, fundamental privacy right. Think about that. Fundamental privacy right derived from the liberty language. See how they can't say just derived from Section 1? They have to couch it in derived from the liberty language, because that opens it up to interpretation, of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment to obtain an abortion. So, and then they said it had to be balanced against the state's interest in the health of the pregnant woman and in the potential life of her unborn child, which interests become compelling at different stages of pregnancy. So the state's interest in the health of a woman doesn't become compelling and therefore strong enough to support regulation of the abortion procedure until the end of the first trimester of pregnancy, they said, at which point the risks associated with undergoing an abortion are approximately equal to the risks associated with carrying the child to term and the state's interest in the potential life of the unborn. And this became about privacy derived from the 9th Amendment and derived from the 14th Amendment. Now, what's kind of fascinating about this, let me read the 9th Amendment, because this is where they also cited privacy. This is what it says. It's only one sentence here. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Okay? So enumerated rights, meaning the action of mentioning a number of things one by one, okay? The founders were very concerned about mentioning rights because they didn't want... they didn't want the government to think anything that wasn't listed they had control over. And so they also took this from the 14th Amendment. Now listen to the 14th Amendment, just this a couple of sentences. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Say, now, so far, they've mentioned you as a citizen. Remember that. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Then they switch to the word person. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person, see how they didn't say citizen, person, human, okay, within its jurisdiction of the equal protection of the laws. Now, he took that language and he basically decided that it said that a person isn't a person until they're viable outside the womb, which is in a 9 month gestation would be performing a miracle if you could do that under 20 weeks, right? And but that was certainly the new litmus test that they wanted to put out there. And so what he did was, good old Harry, he's the one that wrote the majority decision. He decided that he would couch these new terms and divide the pregnancy into three different stages so that he could determine and kind of put out there that the value of one trimester is not as good as the value of the next and the value of the next. Okay. Now, before this happened, it was gestation is 9 months because most of the growth happens in the first trimester. Very vital, very important. If none of that happens, you know, you have all these other problems with pregnancy. So that first trimester was very, very important. but he wanted to make it seem less than. He wanted to make it seem like it wasn't as valuable, didn't really matter, person really isn't a person, it doesn't matter how, what has been developed, it just really isn't a person. So he set the stage, and in that delivery of that majority opinion, defined these new three categories for pregnancy, which I found kind of intriguing because that information, it's harder to find. It's harder to find. When you ask, you know, when did the medical establishment establish it, they won't tell you that. And actually, when I searched and searched and searched and searched, it came to this definition. It was a political definition, not a medical one. Now, think about that. Not a medical one. This is a Supreme Court justice who was in love with the medical community because he was a lawyer for it for a while, but wasn't a doctor, wasn't anybody in that field, but wanted to determine when a life is a life. And if you go through history and you even look at the Romans even decided that a life was a life, that a life could even inherit, even in fetus form, in baby form, in the womb, it could inherit property. It had rights. They already had recognized it as a person, and many countries do right now. But I found that that was sort of the basic basics, if you will, of why the decision landed where it did. And that was on a justice that sought to make sure that he convinced the rest of the liberals on that court. It wasn't a 7-2 decision. Some of the conservatives, that he was right. Now, he couldn't prove he was right. He had no basis for saying he was right. He just figured that he was right. And it all came from, too, a case that's never mentioned, hardly ever. And that was the Griswold case a few years before Roe versus Wade. And it was about contraception. And it had to do with the director of Planned Parenthood. The director of Planned Parenthood, Griswold, was in the state of Connecticut, and she was giving contraception to couples. And they had, back in the late 1800s, had already passed laws saying that they were barring people from contraception, okay? And what's the name of it? It was the starts with a C, the laws that came forward. And truly, the state really had no business doing those laws. Comstock laws? Anyway, they had no business doing these laws. But they went ahead and states started adopting them. And Connecticut was one of the hardest on this. They basically said, you jail time and we fine you $100 if we find you giving it out. She, nonetheless, Planned Parenthood, goes into the state, gives it out, goes to jail, pays $100, and they sue. Well, that case basically said that derived from the First Amendment, I mean, they named all of the different amendments, right? And they said there was something in each of them that pointed to zones of privacy. Now, I know you're going, a zone of privacy. What is that? It's kind of like a free speech zone. It doesn't really exist, but they think it does, so it does. So the Supreme Court got together and said that there were zones of privacy in which the government couldn't tell you what to do. What's kind of fascinating about that is that when you have, let's say, okay, they decided that they can't tell you whether or not you can have birth control in your bedroom, okay? And so this is what was sort of like enacting the privacy realm, a privacy zone. But I'll tell you this, your husband hits you in your bedroom, state gets involved, right? Yeah. Murders you in your bedroom, state gets involved. So they really had very contradictory type of reasoning with this, because what was supposed to happen was, if you harm another, now you violated what was supposed to be privacy. Now that's subject to the state to come in and say, you have violated somebody else's rights. A husband violating a wife, a husband murdering a wife, or a wife murdering a husband, you have now hurt somebody. But what they did was they basically declared it a privacy zone, meaning that Roe versus Wade could kind of rush in on the coattails 6, 7, 8 years later and basically gleam off of that same privacy and say that an abortion was private and that you didn't have to tell your husband later on, and that minors, they don't really need to, you know, because it's private. But they're contradicting themselves, because you're harming another human. There's nothing private about that. And Rehnquist said so. He actually said there is no privacy in abortion. This is not a private act. Give me a break. But that's where we landed with it. And so Griswold, the Griswold case with the contraception, they shouldn't have done that in the very beginning, is really what the deal was with that. But they did. And instead of just removing that from the books, they took the big jump the shark moment to say that we're going to declare zones of privacy. They also kind of hearkened into the Second Amendment that said that, you know, no quartering of soldiers in your home, right? See, your home is a sanctuary, but it's only a sanctuary as long as you're not harming somebody else. They didn't allude to that. They didn't want to go there. And that's why they say the decision of Roe versus Wade and even Griswold was so flawed, because the Supreme Court justices took it upon themselves to declare privacy on something that had nothing to do under the realm of privacy. Because as we all know, when you harm somebody else, now you're taking away somebody else's rights, and especially with the right to life, as that infant should have. And there are many countries where they say that that fetus, that baby, the second it's there, not just with quickening. See, with quickening, it was, when can you feel the baby move? Well, that's because our equipment, you couldn't tell. I mean, you couldn't tell what was going on in there. By the time you can hear it, at 28 days, it's already forming its heart. So by the time you can hear it is a little bit further down. But that's how even Aristotle said, and Aristotle, I'm not a big, huge fan of Aristotle, by the way. He's come out with some different stuff. But he even said it's the quickening. It's the that's when the baby gets its soul. Now, I don't really agree with that. I think it's at conception. But that's when the baby gets its soul, is when you can feel it move, even though it's moving and you just can't feel it. But they didn't know that then. So that's where the court even went there as well. It was that quickening. It was when you can feel it. But they also declared, by declaring trimesters, which is a really important part of this, by declaring the trimester thing, what they're basically doing is saying, in the first trimester, it's not a person, it's okay. In the second trimester, now that's a little iffy because they sort of go on to each other, these trimesters. And so it got really convoluted as it went on. And the Supreme Court knew that it was going to, did it anyway. Be right back on the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Hi there. Welcome back. You're listening to the Kate Daly Show. I'm talking from a different sort of different point of view, maybe a little bit more history on why Roe versus Wade came to be. And I'm doing that because I don't think as a populace, even those that lived through this, are pretty well informed on how it came to be and who the majority Supreme Court guy, Harry Blackmun, who he listened to and liked and actually regurgitated in the statements for the majority. What I think is hard to understand is how many leaps and bounds they took outside of the Constitution to interpret the Constitution on the 14th and 9th Amendment, when they did Roe versus Wade. And that was Harry. He was the majority, and he actually kept messaging and making sure that these individuals knew that he was right. And he has a very interesting, what did he graduate in Harvard?
He graduated summa cum laude. That means mm-hmm. with the highest achievement right. in mathematics. Which means if he was dividing up the fetus into trimesters, mm-hmm. he was using fractions, and then he was putting a value on each trimester.
Yeah,
that's what
sure
a mathematician
was.
Does.
Boom. You're exactly
that's
right,
what
Susan.
Mao did with people. He yeah. assigned numbers
he
to
assigned
people
value.
Instead of names.
Yeah.
Yes.
And never once did you hear that in the first trimester is where the majority of the growth is, truly, because they grow,
the
what, 10 times
growth.
Their size. Yeah.
Yes.
And develop all of the brain, the spine, everything, the heart. And so by the time you can even hear the heartbeat, I mean, that's a little bit down the road from yeah. when it actually forms and starts pumping blood through their system, which is like 28 days, I think. So let me give you a little background, because I know I'm not going to have time to get into all of this, and I have so much more, and I'll have to go into this a different day, because it does bring up a good dialogue on privacy and liberty and how the courts defined both, and how if they're one and the same. So let me say this about Harry. His roots and what he based his decision on Roe versus Wade, coming from that, like I said, he was a conservative judge, but then he turned very liberal when he got in. We've seen that happen before. Okay, so there was a society called the American Eugenics Society. Frederick Osborne became president of this society in 1946, and he was also put in charge of the Population Council. This is clear back in the 40s. There was a group organized, and it was funded by who none other than John D. Rockefeller. Isn't it always interesting how Rockefellers always crop up when we're talking about sex, birth control, abortion, eugenics. All of these things, eugenics. Yeah. Horrid family. So in 56, Osborne, who was the president of the Eugenics Society, he addressed the British Eugenics Society, and he affirmed his belief in Galton's dream and proposed what he called the voluntary unconscious selection by changing laws, customs, and social expectations, which was absolutely, this was in 56, so you know that this was coming down the pike, and they were going to do everything they could do to do this. Lo and behold, they're the ones to accomplish this voluntary unconscious selection. He advocated for the appeal to bring about the idea, which had not been cast before, as a wanted child versus an unwanted child. That's what they had to get through to the American people to get them to understand that, and this is what you'll hear from pro-choicers today, it was unwanted. I didn't want it. Therefore, I could murder it because I didn't want it.
They're different values.
But yeah, they wouldn't have a good quality of life because I didn't want it. Okay? So that has come full circle, hasn't it? So in 68, when a lot of people were believing that the eugenics movement had disappeared, it wasn't, Osborne published a book called The Future of Human Hereditary and Heredity and An Introduction to Eugenics in Modern Society. And he asserted that less intelligent women be convinced to reduce their births voluntarily and in order to further both the social and biological improvement of the population. He used a euphemism for racial minorities by urging the contraception be targeted to people at the lower economic and education level. And so he also recommended that disguising the reason for making birth control equally available, he said measures for improving the hereditary base of intelligence and character are most likely to be attained under a name other than eugenics. Just don't use eugenics. Use any other name. This is exactly why they changed the name of the society a few years forward. But when he wrote, when Harry wrote his opinion, it was 5 years after Osborne's book on modern eugenics in a modern society, right? Blackmun's first four introductory paragraphs to his majority opinion on Roe versus Wade mentioned nothing about the newly decreed right of privacy. The whole crux of why he decided to put that opinion out there. It had nothing to do with privacy. Because honestly, privacy in that, I mean, it was a stretch. But he does state this, get this, this is in the majority opinion of Roe versus Wade. Population growth, pollution, poverty, and racial overtones tend to complicate, not simplify the problem.
You think?
Yeah. Does that sound like privacy? He was concerned about a privacy issue here?
No, not at all.
No, not at all. It sounds like he was really indoctrinated into eugenics. He directly cited the two men that were closely connected to the British and the American eugenics societies. Glanville Williams is cited twice. Christopher Teats is cited three times. And then Lawrence Later's book, Abortion, is cited seven times in that majority opinion. And then the mystery about his curious opening paragraphs in Roe are solved because if you look at Later's book, Abortion, which contains panicked rhetoric of the following, and this is what it contained, the frightening mathematics of, see, here we go, mathematics of population growth overwhelms piecemeal solutions and timidity. No government, particularly of an underdeveloped nation, can solve a population crisis without combining legalized abortion with a permanent intensive contraception campaign. Wow. So Glanville, one of the guys cited in that opening statement by the chief Supreme Court guy, Harry, was a eugenics society. He wasn't chief, but he was the one delivering the majority. Was a eugenics society fellow in England. And before citing Williams and Roe, Blackmun, the Supreme Court justice, would have seen Williams' explicit reference to eugenics, contraception and eugenics, and the problem doesn't even concern the limits of substance, though this in of itself is sufficient magnitude. He goes on and on and on about how wonderful eugenics is. So then Blackmun acknowledged the Catholic scientific view that life begins at the moment of conception. But Blackmun relied on books and articles espousing the science of eugenics to back up his entire statement. Had nothing to do with what he was purporting it to be, as far as the 14th Amendment and the 9th Amendment. One book contained a subheading titled The New Eugenics, and it cites two men that can be described as maniacal eugenicists who were seemingly paranoid about a deteriorating human heredity. So Blackmun cited the article The New Biology and the Future of Man, and it says artificial gestation, genetic engineering, and suspended animation, they constitute a new phase in human life in which man takes over the deliberate control of his own evolution. It goes on and on. But in March 73, 2 months after Roe was handed down, Osborne's American Eugenics Society changed the name of the society to the Study of Social Biology. Remember, this is all funded by Rockefeller. Society of Social Biology is what they changed it to. And so I found that to be quite interesting. I also find that when you look at anything for pro-choice right now, they automatically, Alan Guttmacher, he was actually the vice president of the Eugenics Society. Did you know that that society is quoted almost on every pro-choice platform? For the numbers, the fake numbers that they put out, they said 1.2 million were dying every year before Roe versus Wade. But then just magically, all of a sudden, Roe versus Wade goes through. And in that first year of 73, they only had 615,000 abortions, not 1.2 million. It dropped.
The numbers.
Makes no sense. Nope. Because the providers went up. Right.
Yeah.
All their numbers come from this society. He was the vice president, named after the vice president of the Eugenics Society. That's insane. Also, I wanted to mention that Blackmun basically said that, and trying to define those three trimesters. That's a really important part of this because I don't think people realize when that came about, but it came about because of him. When he tried to do that framework and the value of life and so forth, he also said that in his decision, that it could very easily fall apart if they ever decided that it was a person in that womb. That the whole thing, Roe versus Wade, would completely fall apart.
Wow.
Yeah. He knew it. And he knew that he was taking liberties in the Constitution and interpreting it in a way that was too far out there. And so just the recognition that we know that they do this again and again with cases. We know that they step in to reinterpret, not interpret, reinterpret to their liking. This is exactly what he did, and he convinced the other justices that he was right. He just kept doing it and kept going and kept going, kept messaging them, kept telling them, no, I'm right on this, I'm right on this. We have to divvy it up into three so that the first part of that life does not seem very valuable. And lo and behold, if you go ask anyone today that's a pro-choicer, what will they tell you? It's a clump of cells. It's a clump of cells, the whole first trimester. You can totally get away with an abortion. And that's absolutely 100% wrong. Yet, that's what they're going to tell you. That's the excuse that they use because they wanted them to feel like that. They wanted them to feel like it wasn't a 9-month gestation, that there were parts that were less valuable than others, and there was an appropriate time, quote unquote, where you could get rid of it without any consequence. Well, when you look at the mental health of the women that do it, huge percentage, over half have depression, huge percentage have problems having babies after that. I mean, none of that is disclosed. In fact, they even go to lengths to say, nothing will happen to you. You're totally fine. But I think with Blackmun, if we don't analyze him and why he did what he did, and we had cases since then. In 1989, there was a landmark case. We've had cases since then that tried to say, you know, personhood. And by the way, I mean, it wasn't a ruling. They actually said that they were subject to the state's laws, but not in a case of certain things. Okay, that's what Roe versus Wade did. But different states have tried and have prevailed. I think it was Missouri or Minnesota, one of them, I think it was Missouri, that actually put out that it was a person, that this was a human being. Because all along in history, even during Roman time, I mean, you go clear back, you will find that we already had talked about it as a person. it was a person that could get legal rights to property, hasn't even been born yet. That it was a person, and then they even would stave off the execution of women that were pregnant because it was a separate being.
Right.
Right. So if you go back into history, you'll find all of those things. But we want to think that the whole world has come to the conclusion that we have, that this is totally okay and nothing's wrong with it and there's no consequences to it. That whole Supreme Court that did Roe versus Wade knew exactly that there were going to be huge problems coming up with this and that it was fragile. Just as Blackmun said, the whole thing falls apart if they ever declare it a person. So on the heels of that, I just... When I have a whole nother section on this that I would love to go over, but I found that when looking at this and when really dialing in, it was so much about eugenics that this wasn't a court trying to decide for this one woman in Texas what she should do, because initially she actually lied and said it was a rape. She lied. And by the way, rape is only 1% of the numbers, by the way. And by the way, I don't know if people know this, 60 to 70% of the women that are even raped don't opt for the abortion. They don't. So the numbers are very, very low. And the number of deaths that even happen during an abortion or complications from an abortion during the time before Roe versus Wade were extremely low and declining, by the way. So whenever they say health of the woman, it's ridiculous because the year before, I think it was 24 deaths, 26 deaths. I mean, out of the entire nation, it was going down quite a bit. We had better health care and things like that, better medicines. But the eugenics component of this, Rockefeller's behind this, and his love for the people in that movement, citing them over anything else, using the 14th Amendment, using the 9th Amendment to state his case when he had no right to do so. Because there is no privacy zone to which when you hurt somebody else, there isn't a consequence to that. That's where laws do come into play. That's where limited government does come into play. You're hurting somebody. So, but they took that, they put it under the umbrella of privacy, and they said it was her privacy. It didn't even involve the man. Nope. Man didn't help in any way, I suppose. And now we had a death of a baby. Definitely hurting somebody else, but didn't want to acknowledge it. And also did not want to acknowledge that the baby is a person, even though crime on all levels will tell you differently. But I found that kind of fascinating, too. So I will definitely do the rest of this, because the rest of this gets into the truth about the numbers and the truth about the facts in relation to what pro-choice says today, because I really wanted to cover that. I won't have time. But it's fascinating to me, because when you start to really wrap your brain around the history of this, it's a whole different angle, isn't it? Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. And be faithful, be fearless. See you back here tomorrow.